Mark Adams is the voice of the mid-majors. How did that come about? Like, what was the process that kind of moniker was thrown your way?
You know, it really came about, Harry, many years ago when I first started broadcasting, and I got noticed by ESPN because I was on the A10 network. I was doing some Mid-American Conference games, and they asked me ultimately to start doing some games for ESPN. And the coordinating producer for college basketball back then for ESPN was a man by the name of Dan Steer, and he asked me, what was my goal as a broadcaster? And I said, Dan, look, I'm not interested in being Dick Vitale. I'm not interested in being Jay Billis or Fran Fraschilla, and I respect all of those guys. I said, but my goal is that when you have a big, big, big game bleeping there on your radar screen, just beeping away, I want to be that other dot on your screen as a guy that you consider for that game. You may not give me that game, but I want to be the guy that you think of for that game. And that's really how it all started. And so I started getting assignments that made sense for them and made sense for me and my goals. And I just kind of taken the ball around with it. I'm grateful to ESPN for giving me that ball.
You had, I don't know, maybe 17 years as a coach, I think 10 at the D1 level. Do you miss the coaching part of it, though, after all these years of broadcasting now?
No. And in fact, I never looked back. You know, I got fired in 1996. I was 40 years old. And the reason for that, Harry, and I'm not speaking about any other coach here. I'm just speaking about me. I really didn't feel like I was a very good father or husband. I just was, you know, constantly consumed with recruiting and the next game and that next kid. And I just really felt like I was, in a way, letting my family down. And so the night I got fired in 1996, I was down in my den. And I looked at my wife and came down the stairs and I said, honey, I'm sorry. Well, she jumped me. I mean, she was all over me. She's a very competitive person. And she said, literally in my face, said, don't you be sorry. You turned this thing around. You led the country in block shots. They had the best season they ever had. I said, honey, I'm not sorry about any of that. She goes, well, what are you sorry about? I said, I'm sorry because I haven't been the best father and husband I need to be. And instead of rebuilding college basketball programs, we're going to start rebuilding our lives together as a family. And here I never looked back. I just never looked back. And listen, I enjoyed every single millisecond of coaching for the 17 years I was in it. But once I decided that I had a new goal in my life to be a better father and husband, I never looked back to coaching. In fact, I still coach today. I coach the 12U Panther baseball team, you know, and I coach myself a lot on a day-to-day basis. And I'm just enjoying life, and I get to coach on the air every night, both teams. I never lose. And that's a positive thing for me.
That's exactly right. Hey, I announced games for an NAIA team here in St. Louis, and you were an NAIA guy for a while as well. Talk about that level of basketball.
It was my favorite level. In fact, I'll tell you a great story. First of all, I went to Rocky Mountain College, and I was the head basketball coach at Rocky Mountain College, and I was 25 years old. I had just turned 25 years old. And the way I got the job was they had gone through 17 consecutive losing seasons. And, you know, ultimately, they were a team that really needed help, and it only paid $12,000 a year. That's how a 25-year-old head coach gets the job. Nobody else wanted it, and I got the job. Well, 3 years later, we went to Kansas City, which was the pinnacle, really, of my coaching career. But what I loved about it, Harry, was that I not only got to coach, but I also taught in the classroom. And in 1989, at Oregon, we were nationally ranked the top 25 in NAIA basketball. And ultimately, not only were we nationally ranked, but I was ranked as the number one professor at Western Oregon, which had 4,000 students. And I'll never forget that. That was the highlight of my whole coaching career, was that honor of being recognized as a great teacher. And I think today Division I basketball would be in a better state if more coaches were actually professors and teachers in the classroom. I think it gives you more clarity as to what your role is. I think it gives you a greater purpose and sense of belonging within the academic community on the campus. And I also think it keeps you morally and personally grounded. And I told Kelvin Sampson this one day. He asked me when I was down in Oklahoma visiting with him. And he was head coach of Oklahoma at that time. And he said, Mark, if you had one decision to make over again, what would it be? And now, Harry, I went from Western Oregon, the head coach there, to become Kelvin's assistant at Washington State. I looked Kelvin right in the eye, and I said, Kelvin, I would have never come work for you. He looked at me. You know, he wasn't very happy with me. But I said, Kelvin, let me tell you why. I said, as a 35-year-old man, it was the right decision for me to make at that time in 1989. I said, but But now, as a 50-year-old man, which I was at that time, I'm a lot older now, I said, you know what? I was happy as a small college head coach. I was an educator. I was a coach. I was a mentor. And I had balance in my life, and that's really where I belong. And, Harry, that goes back to your first question,
yeah,
as to why I gravitate toward the teams that I gravitate toward, because I identify with that type of coach, that type of teacher.
Mark, I know you do some motivational speaking. Talk about that. Like, you travel around a lot and speak to businesses and teams and all of that. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, Harry, it's been fascinating to apply the lessons I've learned through that journey as a speaker. And I talk about those experiences. And here's the way I frame it. You know, I worked with Microsoft. I was the keynote speaker the day that Microsoft launched the Surface Pro, for example. I worked with companies like Hershey. I worked with the United States Army. I worked with U.S. Bank. And here's what I learned from those professional people that I met along the way. Whenever you develop a strategic plan and moving forward, you always develop that plan based upon the highest common denominator, not the lowest common denominator. I see so many universities and so many organizations that try to appease the lowest common denominator, which is the worst thing you can do. You must set policy that's geared toward challenging the highest common denominator and most talented people in your organization. And the bottom 10%, you just get rid of. It's just that simple. But we try to appease the bottom 10% in some ways in our society and across organizations. And I speak against that. And I'm not shy about talking about that, because that's what I've learned as a professional consultant, as a professional speaker with some of the greatest organizations in the world.